Okay, well, today we continue with part two of church business. It's not really a sermon, it's mostly comments about things going on here at church that members would hopefully be interested in. I have about, around 20 minutes of material to share, then we'll take a break, teachers will come back in, and we'll review the financial report and the budget. This whole morning is sort of like our congregational meeting in a way. So if you are a visitor, sorry, try us again next Sunday. There was a lot of discussion and interaction last week regarding the affirmation forms during both the Q&A and afterwards, which is good because people care about our church, they care about these things, and there was a lot of talk about this. And most of these discussions, at least the ones I were involved with, had to do with anonymity and the advantages and disadvantages of having everyone's names on the forms. And as you noticed, we did not get those forms mailed out this past week, but the reason isn't related to that particular matter. But I do, however, want to offer a few comments about anonymity. We've not talked about this for a long time, and given last Sunday's discussion, I think it's on a lot of people's minds, and it would probably be helpful to address it further. But anonymity wasn't the only thing. Afterwards and through the week, folks had other questions about this whole process as well. And this morning at about 4:30 a.m., it dawned on me why there is some confusion. And some of this came because I was debriefing in my sleep my most recent conversation about all this stuff. In some ways, the affirmation process feels like a vote. And in some ways, it is like a vote, but it isn't really a vote. In some ways, the affirmation forms process feels like a survey. And in some ways, it is like a survey, but it really isn't a survey. In some ways, the affirmation process seems like an evaluation. And, in some ways, it's like an evaluation, but it's not exactly an evaluation. In some ways, it feels like a vote of confidence. And in some ways, it is, but it's not exactly that. And it also feels like a quality control exam. You know, here's a checklist. See if anything about the product fails to meet the criteria. And so admittedly, you know, some folks are having a hard time figuring out what we're looking for in all this. And even among, quite frankly, the elders, if you were to ask each one of us, you'd probably get slightly different takes on this. So a little history. In the first church I pastored, I came up with this affirmation process in reaction to the problems that I saw with straight up and down votes. The affirmation process worked well for us there. I incorporated it here. Other churches I have since learned have come up with their own way of doing something similar. It's not a perfect system of the things I mentioned. It's more like a quality control exam than the others on that list. And the checklist, of course, would be the qualifications found in Titus and 1 Timothy. But as mentioned last week, the qualifications include the ability to carry out the responsibilities of an elder as well, which are found in other passages, 1 Peter, Acts, Ephesians, 1 Thessalonians, Hebrews, and so on. But the affirmation process goes well beyond that as some sort of rigid and sterile inspection. It's meant to invite honest comments, helpful input, and so on. And the key words, and it's about the best I can do here, the key words on the affirmation forms are affirmation, which implies agreement of some sort, and support, which, of course, implies confidence or backing and that sort of thing. To quote it from the form, please review the following scriptures and indicate your level of support. It's not tightly defined. Now, if the affirmation were just a vote, then there would be no reason to have anyone's name. If it were just a survey, like, for instance, on a scale from 1 to 5, tell us how satisfied you are, we wouldn't need anyone's names. But since it is also and mostly a quality control exam, well, that changes things. So let me explain this. To use an example, we have Larry, who is an elder at First Community Church, just to make up a name. And he's been serving there now for 8 years. And in this church, an elder serves a 4-year term, and when that is over, he must be voted on again. And this time around, Larry gets 51 yays and 49 noes. Tell me what happens. He continues on, correct? He serves another 4 years. Majority rules. It is settled. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that really troubling. How could someone possibly serve the church effectively when almost half of the people don't want him in that capacity? Why did so many people say no? Well, actually, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is that more people said yes than said no. Now, in my mind, that would be troubling if you got 20 no's or 10. We would never expect 100%, but what would be behind even 20 no's? Well, there's no way to tell. And again, it wouldn't matter. In contrast, the affirmation process tries to accommodate any legitimate reasons an elder should not be serving. For instance, you could have 99 people say yes and one person say no. And if the reason behind the one no is valid, that is, it's true, and it's substantial, then that is what carries the day. Henry, a member, checks off no and writes, "Larry is having an affair with my sister." Well, that settles it. How could Larry possibly serve? The affirmations have much more weight, much more punch than a vote. And with a vote, you just tally up numbers. With an affirmation, you have to carefully examine every answer and comment. And with that authority to weigh in with that much weight comes responsibility. And there's, quite frankly, no responsibility if it's anonymous. Now, just to clarify here real quick, this is not to suggest that if in our church, for instance, Larry got one no for any reason, that he would be asked to step down. Obviously, there'd be a lot of factors that have to be considered. But yes, having an affair, that would certainly rise to that level. But back to the point at hand here on anonymity. You know, what would we do with a comment, "Walter's having an affair with my sister," if we can't follow up and verify it? You know, whose sister? And indeed, we need to take this to heart, really, because this is what's behind this whole thing of having names. Paul warns us about how we entertain accusations against an elder. We are instructed to verify those sorts of things. 1 Timothy 5:19. But there is more here than verification. When I fill out the form, knowing that my name is on it, I have to weigh carefully just how serious the issue is. You know, this weakness or flaw or limitation, is it really a liability to his ministry? Is this something I really believe rises to the level of questioning an elder's eligibility? If so, you know, I have to do my civic duty, so to speak, and state that. But anonymity invites all sorts of things, not just potential for slander, but also complaints that really aren't relevant. And that's not the purpose of the affirmation form. It's to weigh in on whether an elder meets the qualifications and is able to fulfill his responsibilities. Now, there may be a way, part two of this, there may be a way to share constructive advice and concerns and other helpful input anonymously. And I want to explore that. I've got some ideas about that. I think, you know, those online surveys you do to get the free sandwich at Wendy's, you know, maybe something like that. On something like that, I think we'd want to do all that we could to make that easy and comfortable. You know, that feedback would be valuable. And we have done a few anonymous surveys in the past on lighter issues, but maybe we need to take more advantage of that avenue for even weightier things. Perhaps, just throwing this out, perhaps, not proposing this, but just kicking around ideas as I'm wrestling with this, part of that anonymous survey could have a place where members can rate each of the elders from 1 to 5 on particular qualities. And this would be for the purpose of helping us improve, better ourselves, self-improvement for the best interests of the church. You know, 1 to 5, his teachings are helpful. He is able to give wise counsel to others. He is able to comfort those going through a rough time. He accepts constructive criticism. He is patient with others, and so on. You know, personally, I would dread a survey like that. But I recognize the value of it, and I also kind of fear that the survey would scare off all the elders and anyone who might consider ever being an elder. But the elders haven't had a chance really to talk about this yet, and it's probably going to require quite a bit of discussion, but it is something I'm very eager to get into, because as a matter of principle, I favor the idea of inviting more feedback and inviting more scrutiny as a matter of principle. And I know that the other elders feel this way because we've been kind of emailing back and forth about that stuff. Now, I understand the hesitancy to say something about somebody else that needs to be said, but, you know, you don't want to cause a rift. We can all relate to that concern. And I realize that we are putting you in a difficult spot with these affirmation forms. And folks have expressed to me, a number have, great apprehension about these follow-ups if they check the no box for an elder. So let me say a couple things about that. If we were to follow up, the reason would be to get more information, not to strong arm anybody, not to bully them to change their answer, not to belittle them for daring to express their concerns. And the practice in the past, what little there's been, has been actually quite mild. I mean, one of the other elders will follow up perhaps with a phone call or just try to grab the person after the service. It's you know, just follow up with it. It's not an intense, heavy meeting, as I said last week. You know, it's nothing like that. This whole thing, it just kind of depends. There are no hard rules in place on how we actually do this. We just sort of see what, you know, what we think is appropriate at the moment. And in fact, there may not be a need to follow up at all. And let me offer an example. If you wrote, and I'm not suggesting that you write this, but if you wrote, Wendell gets irritated pretty easily. And so, I think the point's already been made now, you know. That doesn't need to be verified, you know. I can't really contest that. Now, the elders may have to evaluate whether that irritableness is a liability, but the fact is a given one. But this one, I saw Dave Stevens in a barroom fight 3 weeks ago. That would be a surprise, you know. That would need to be checked out. Also, while we're on the subject, if a no does reveal a problem, then the remedy may not necessarily be stepping down from the position. It might be something along the line of the elder recognizing that this is something he needs to work on so as to rebuild the trust of the congregation. And then we just see how that goes. Again, all this kind of depends. There are no hard, fast rules in that, but that would be, I would think, a prudent way to go about it. You know, and for the record, I am a whole lot less irritable than I was 5 years ago. So everybody should be saying amen about that. Everybody should be saying amen about that. All right. I humbly submit myself to you in that area. All right. So, for now, expect to receive the traditional affirmation form, hopefully this week. We do extend an invitation at the bottom of these forms. We always have for an opportunity for you to make additional comments about the church, church programs, the eldership, anything you want, and that sort of thing. And then we're, you know, and the eldership meetings coming up here in the coming weeks and months, we're going to explore you know, how we can do a better job of soliciting input that we find would be constructive, helpful for us to do better. All right, should I shift gears and move on to something entirely different, or should I take questions? I'd love to take questions, but time does not allow it. Isn't that convenient? All right, shifting gears. I want to take a few minutes now to address some issues relating to the safety and security of both our facility and our people. And some of this will involve giving you an update on what's being done what has been done or what will be done. Some of this will involve a pep talk of sorts, asking folks here to please do this, please don't do that. And a couple things will be an invitation for your input. So first on the list is sicknesses. Talked about this long ago, but nothing real recently. If you are scheduled to serve in the nursery or teach Sunday school and are sick, please fill in the blank. Please don't. Feel free to stay home. If you have a sick kid, please don't put them in the nursery or Sunday school class. Please keep them at home. If a parent or teacher asks you not to put your child in the nursery or Sunday school, please don't be offended. They are simply honoring church policy. And to all three of these, everyone says a hearty
amen.
All right, very good. We have families here with weak immune systems and adults with certain health challenges who have weak immune systems. All right, second on the list is liability. And all this, I don't know if Lynn Wegman is here, but if he were, all of this would be warming his heart for sure, because he's our insurance agent. In your membership book and on the back of the bulletin board and on the bulletin board in the nursery and posted in every Sunday school room is a green sheet, 8.5 by 11, that spells out specific guidelines on how adults are to supervise children here. It applies to everyone volunteering in the nursery, teaching Sunday school, youth sponsors, and so on. So please review those on a regular basis and faithfully adhere to them. These guidelines are designed to help protect our children from adults with ill intentions and to protect our adults from false or frivolous accusations. So it's very important that we're faithful to that. Along this line, we have had off and on in the past a practice of staffing the nursery with two women and one man. And that hasn't always worked out, but starting this year, we're going to be more diligent in that. And also, only those who are scheduled to be in the nursery or who are a parent of a baby should be in the nursery. Other liability concerns for this morning. Joshua and I get here at 8 o'clock. We try to clean off the snow and the ice at the two main entrances. But after that, we get preoccupied with getting things ready for the service. We need to remember that churches are not exempt from a lawsuit if someone slips and falls or injured. And so when you come in, if you notice that the entryways need attention again because of additional snow or whatever, how do I put this? The need is the call. That is the Lord calling you to grab a shovel and broom and go at it. All right. Everyone on board with that? Everyone can help with that. Just don't look around and say, someone needs to clean up this mess. All right. As a reminder, moving on to something else, churches have been sued for sharing with its people private health information regarding a loved one that a member has asked prayer for. I find this shockingly disturbing, but it does happen. So please always get permission if you're asking prayer for somebody else. I know you're going to be upset with me at times, but I cannot put your Aunt Betty on our prayer list unless Aunt Betty is okay with that. Now, I subscribe to a journal that specializes in laws and taxes that concern churches. And here's an example of where things are going. And Guy would probably have a lot to talk about this as well, because he works for Brotherhood Mutual. And you deal with this stuff, I'm sure, a lot in some capacity. But in this month's issue, a church in Illinois was sued because of a car accident that the pastor caused. And the pastor was distracted because he was on his cell phone, and he was on his cell phone because the church secretary called him. And it was argued that the secretary knew that he would be driving and that the pastor would pick up the phone, and they were all negligent, including the church, because the church should have adopted a policy prohibiting such phone calls. Now, the defendants did not win, but it was noted that this is an area where churches could at some point become quite vulnerable. So I suppose if we were to incorporate a policy here, it would be, just don't call me anytime. I can only see the affirmation forms now. I can only see that. All right, let's move on to security of our property. 3 or 4 weeks ago on a Saturday night, someone damaged our back door here in an attempted break-in. We have secured that door better. More needs to be done. Dave Birch, hint, hint. And we have been talking about security cameras for some time, both inside and out. And I'm happy to report that Brian Harmison has been working on that. And last night, Pat and I and Brian were here, and we got some of them up and running. And we got more to do, but that's kind of an update here on that. But more important than property is, of course, our people, security of those occupying our facility, especially on Sunday mornings. And as you know, at 10 o'clock, we now limit it. And this is a common practice in churches to just one entrance. And that would be that one over there. And also, we do have annual inspections. This just kind of goes without saying, but we have fire inspections, fire extinguishers, alarms, exit lights, all that stuff. It's the law, and we're happy to do it. We're not happy to pay for it, but we're happy to do it. All right, so this brings up something else. If an alarm goes off, this is multiple choice. A, stand around and try to figure out what's going on. B, take the hand of any child nearby and head for the exit. B. All right. I was not here that Sunday, but I heard that we had a fire alarm go off and everybody stood around trying to figure out what was going on. So it's not a good policy. The alarm goes off, perhaps accidentally. It could go off because there's real threat of imminent danger. So grab a child, head outside. Brad, amen?
Amen.
All right. Very good, because I know you had great concern about that. All right, a big point of discussion in churches right now is that of carrying concealed weapons. This is quite the buzz. And some churches have a policy of no firearms allowed whatsoever. Others, which is kind of our practice here, is anything goes. Others yet have a policy that you can only carry if you get permission from the pastor. And I understand that that's actually the law in Michigan. Now, we don't have an official policy yet. I would welcome feedback on this, but getting permission options seems to have some advantages to it and would probably seem to be quite appropriate. Permission would be granted to those who are members, who can have others vouch for them that they know how to use a firearm responsibly, that they are of a certain age, that they are willing to agree to certain rules like it has to be concealed and you can't be brandishing it, those sorts of things. And what? What's so funny? Has that happened yet today? And then if someone, and here's the important point, if someone was not on that list and they acted in an irresponsible fashion, I would, you know, I think it would be safe to say that the church's liability, well, at least hopefully would be limited in a situation like that. So I welcome your feedback on it, and just trying to apply some good common sense here, knowing that we live in a very opportunist culture, and not everybody who walks into our door here is really friendly to the faith. So we just have to be aware of that. Another area that is somewhat related to safety and security is the internet. We have now a more secure website. We have safeguards in place against malware, and other threats. Downloads are virus-free, at least should be. And something that's long overdue is that now we have internet filtering in place here at the church. It needs to be stepped up to higher level, but at least we have something basic in place, which is helpful. Now, I generally don't think in these terms, but someone pointed out to me that we could have, I hate to even say this stuff, that we could have teenage boys watching porn back in the youth room or grown men watching porn during the Sunday service. You know, God help us, you know, but it is responsible to have filtering in place here at the church. And so we're going to be quite diligent on that. Finally, just a couple comments about our property here. Parking is tight. It's pretty limited. So try to park, you know, fairly close with, 3 feet maybe from the vehicle that you're pulling up next to. And if we could try to protect some of our possessions here, I've talked about this before, but it'd be helpful if the children are not playing in the sound booth back there because we do have expensive equipment there. And we have expensive equipment up here with the musicians. So if they're not on the platform, that'd be helpful. We're in the office area. The stories I could tell you about what goes on in the office area after the service with children. But if you could just encourage them not to do that, that'd be great. And coffee, please attend to your spills. And see, I was able to work that in after all. And to help protect our property, it'd be good if you could get here at 10 o'clock. So I was able to work that one in as well. Coffee spills and punctuality. All right. Shifting gears again on something else. When, and I'll be closing with this one. This is the last gear I'm shifting into. I don't know if it's a low gear, high gear, maybe the reverse gear. I don't know. When Tim St. Peters started to read my Christmas letter, he thought I was setting things up to announce my departure. And it was funny to me. And then when I went back to read it again, I said, yeah, I could see how you could say that. And over the past couple of years, a number of folks have casually asked, how long do you think you're going to be at this? And I don't really know. But the question seems to suggest that people want to change. So So now, just bear with me here for a moment. I say this in all honesty here. I'm not looking for anything here. I'm just laying my cards on the table. I am ever mindful that a church benefits from the strengths of its pastor, but it also, quite frankly, suffers from its weaknesses. And so for me, I find myself wondering, you know, at what point do those weaknesses and flaws of mine actually cause harm, you know, do more damage than good? Or more disturbing to ask, has that point already been crossed? Or even more disturbing, has it always been that way? I don't know. And the affirmation forms are one way to assess this. But apart from those probing questions, and they're questions that are always on my mind, if I were to sketch out a plan, assuming that nothing big changes along the way, it might look something like this. I've been kind of hesitant to share it with you, but I thought maybe today I just need to go for it. And this is not really new, because I've said this to people when this has come up in discussion. So I'll just share it with the whole church family. I'm thinking that sometime around 2020, 2021, 2022, not real sure, what I'd like to do is go part-time, assuming, of course, that the church would benefit from that arrangement and that the budget would allow it. Those things that I am a good fit for, I'd like to continue in. Those things that I don't do so well, there's a long list of those, but those could be passed on to somebody else. Perhaps at that time it could be even a different pastor. But I would think that there would be a different job description, different role, different position. But I'd be here. I'd just be part-time. And then down the road, 10 years later, maybe when I'm in my early to mid-70s, kind of try to start looking to transition as a volunteer. But all this I hold with a very light grip, because I just don't know. As James reminds us, all such plans need to be stated with a disclaimer. As the Lord wills. So that's about the best I can give you for those who may be wondering about that sort of thing. So after all that, I've tried to think of a way to close, and I don't have a clue, except to say that we're going to take a short break and then reconvene back here, let's say at 10 after, and hopefully we'll be able to get out of here at the time that we normally do. But if we do, it won't go much longer than that. So let's meet back here. We'll bring the teachers in, take a short break, and we'll have the review of the budget and the financial reports. All right, thank you.